Thank you for the introduction, and thank you also for the invitation. I was very excited to be given the opportunity to speak here at Perimeter Institute. And today, I'm going to tell you about these objects from symplectic geometry called quantum skein rod operations, and in particular, their computations for these class of interesting varieties, which are the conical symplectic resolutions. So I consider this as a part of a more long-term project whose goal is to compute and understand symplectic geometric or Fleur theoretic, in other words, A model invariants for these class of target varieties. So these conical symplectic resolutions are a fascinating class of varieties that have origins in geometric representation theory and also a lot of interest in mathematical physics. So these are smooth, complex varieties equipped with a holomorphic symplectic form. Such that their map to the affinization is a resolution of singularities. And there are interesting examples coming from representation theory, so things like the cotangent bundles of flag varieties or Nakajima quiver varieties. These are all examples of these symplectic resolutions. And my belief is that studying symplectic topological invariants or Fleur theoretic invariants for these target varieties would be very interesting. One, because they have such rich structure, it might be easier to compute a lot of these invariants for these kind of targets, while the usual case is that these symplectic invariants are very difficult to compute. And also, once you have those kind of enumerative answers to these questions of computing these invariants, they might have natural interpretation in terms of representation theory coming from the origin of these varieties. So today, I'm going to focus on two invariants from symplectic geometry. One is very classical, and one is maybe more modern. So the first one is something called the quantum connection, which goes back to the early days of Gromov-Witten theory and using counts of holomorphic curves to learn something about the symplectic manifold. And I'm going to consider the quantum connection in positive characteristic, so quantum connection in mod p. So these are certain operators indexed by second degree cohomology classes of your symplectic manifold, and they act on what's called the quantum cohomology by some kind of differentiation operator. And the other more modern invariant that I'm going to, or modern operation that I'm going to discuss, is the operations from the title of the talk, which are the quantum skein rod operations. So these were again defined in the late 90s, but their systematic exploration and applications in symplectic topology have only begun in relatively recent years. So these are some operations, again parameterized by some cohomology class. It doesn't have to be degree 2 in this case. And now you have these operations which act on the underlying vector space of the quantum cohomology, maybe with some extra parameters. So today I'm going to discuss an unexpected relationship between the quantum connection and positive characteristic and these quantum skein rod operations in particular, how to use that relationship to compute things like this, which are in general quite difficult to compute. But for conical symplectic resolutions, there is a very nice answer. So that's roughly the direction that I'm headed towards in today's talk. So let me begin by reviewing what this quantum connection is, and why is it interesting for conical symplectic resolutions? And in particular, what are the new features that arise over this positive characteristic? And then I'll talk about quantum senior operations. Then I'll tell you about what the relationship between these two things are. So quantum connection. In mod p, and these are some operations on quantum cohomology defined for symplectic manifolds. So let's take a Kähler manifold. Of course, these kind of Gromov-Witten invariants are deformation invariants, so the actual complex structure matters a little bit less. But it's a Kähler manifold, say, with some nice positivity conditions, some technical thing to make the analysis of holomorphic curves for symplectic jumpers to be easier. So once you have a manifold like this, you can associate a coefficient ring, which today is going to be over Fp, generated by these exponential symbols indexed by the second degree cohomology classes of x. This is a version of what's called the Novikov ring that I'm going to use today. So a lot of these symplectic geometric invariants are defined in terms of counting some holomorphic curves inside your symplectic manifold after choosing some almost complex, compatible almost complex structure. And these symbols are used to isolate counts from curves with different degrees. So from this data, you can define quantum cohomology, which is some algebra whose underlying vector space is just singular cohomology of x with coefficients in this Novikov ring. But you have this ring structure, which is called the quantum product, that uses these Gromov-Witten invariants, or counts of holomorphic curves, to define them. So defined this way. So if you want to take the quantum product of two classes like this, you expand that in some chosen basis of cohomology, and the structure constants in that basis are given by counts of holomorphic curves. So in this case, it's a genus zero curve with three mark points, with instance constraints along the mark points at the Poincaré dual cycles of these cohomology classes that you're looking at. So, and then you separate the counts using this Novikov parameter. And in particular, it's a deformation of the classical cut product in the sense that if you forget all the contributions coming from non-constant curves, this just recovers that classical cut product.
Yes, question?
Yes.
So genus zero cohomology invariants are one of the irrational integers.
Yes. Right. So this is where this kind of condition comes in. So this is called the semi-positive condition. And in this case, the Gromov-Witten invariants have a symplectic definition, which is given in terms of counts to some perturbed solutions to, solutions to a perturbed Cauchy-Riemann type equation. And one needs to show that those moduli space of solutions is actually, moduli space of solutions satisfying these kinds of instance constraints is a smooth, compact manifold of dimension zero. And then you can define the counts as the cardinality of the connected components of that moduli space. So in these cases, you actually get integral invariants.
So, sorry.
Using the simplicity.
That is proven for Kähler manifold satisfying that condition, or only some Kähler manifold?
So it's proven using the symplectic geometric definition of the problem.
But for some Kähler x, or for all Kähler x satisfying that condition?
For all compact Kähler that satisfy this, you can use the symplectic definition to show that these counts are integers. My targets are not going to be compact, but for these, it turns out to be also integral as well. Thank you. So for now, I would like to define the quantum connection. So for a second degree cohomology class like this, one can associate a derivation of this Novikov ring that acts by x on the exponential symbols that generate this ring like this. So the eigenvalues, so to speak, are given by the pairing between the second degree homology classes with the second degree homology classes. And from this, you can define the quantum connection. So now these are operations that will act on the underlying vector space of quantum cohomology. And these have these extra formal parameter of degree 2. Which is like the loop rotation parameter. And then it's a derivative, it's a connection such that the connection matrix is given by the matrix of the quantum multiplication by this class A. So this is the quantum connection. Now the quantum connection is something that's rather easy to write down because it only uses the data of three-pointed Gromov-Witten invariance in genus 0, which is a very small part of the whole enumerative geometry of holomorphic curves. It's like targets like this. So it's a degree 2 operator because this formal parameter also carries degree 2. And now it's known for conical symplectic resolutions that these are very interesting to study. So quantum connection is easy to define, relatively easy to define, but very rich. So for these target varieties given by conical symplectic resolutions, you have a lot of symmetry for these targets. So you have the S1 action, or a C star action, that acts on X by scaling this holomorphic symplectic form. And you also have a lot of extra torus action in many examples that preserves this holomorphic symplectic form, in particular, acts in some Hamiltonian way. And with respect to these extra symmetry, you can define correspondingly the equivariant versions of quantum cohomology and equivariant versions of the quantum connection. And it's actually, maybe a small remark is that it's actually important for these kind of target varieties to work equivariantly to have some non-trivial counts of holomorphic spheres. So covariance here is rather essential. And now the quantum connection, the equivariant quantum connection for symplectic resolutions, has been studied extensively in earlier years. So one example of that study is this theorem by Braverman, Mulliken, and Kukov that says that if you take the equivariant quantum connection for a particular conical symplectic resolution given by the cotangent bundle of the flag variety, then this connection is actually gauge equivalent to some known connection in geometric representation theory. It's equivalent to something called the trigonometric Casey connection. I'm not going to get into this, but the message I want to deliver here is that these kinds of symplectic invariants for conical symplectic resolutions are very rich things to study. They rather naturally recover and generalize existing constructions in representation theory. And moreover, they satisfy some very nice properties that are not present in invariants for general symplectic manifolds. But for today, the key observation is that for these kinds of things, the counts are again defined over Z, not over Q. And in particular, it's perfectly sensible to consider their reduction mod P. And then you can expect new phenomena to appear, because even if the differential equation admits a mod P reduction, maybe its solutions are only defined over Q, and therefore you can't reduce everything from characteristic zero story to this case, and you need to study new things in the mod P situation. And one thing that I want to discuss is this thing called the P curvature, which is something that exists in all for all connections in mod P. And the P curvature is something defined as follows. So a new phenomenon, one new phenomenon that appears over positive characteristic is that if you have a derivation, so if you have some operator that satisfies the license rule, then it's also true in characteristic P that the pth power of that derivation is also a derivation. So does the pth power. So this is kind of surprising, because you expect something like this to be an order P operator, but in mod P, that still satisfies the Leibniz rule, and therefore the derivations in mod P have this extra structure, which is the pth power operation. And using this, you can define something called a P curvature, which measures the failure of the connection to preserve this kind of pth power structure. So you may compare this to the usual notion of a curvature. So for example, the usual curvature is a two-form that takes in two vector fields like this, and then it measures the failure of the connection as a map from vector fields to the endomorphisms of your bundle to be a map of Lie algebras. So it measures the failure for this Lie bracket structure to be preserved by the connection. And P curvature is a new thing that happens in mod P, because you have this extra structure, which is a pth power operation for derivations. And accordingly, there's some analogous notion of a P curvature. And for us, I'm going to consider this P curvature for the equivariant quantum connection in mod P. In this case, this writes, so for every second degree cohomology class A like this, you can write down a P curvature. And you have this extra parameters T showing up, because the quantum connection is a differentiates in T del direction, not just del direction, as the usual connections do. So what I want to say about the P curvature is that it's something that just canonically exists for all connections in positive characteristic. And because the quantum connection is a mod p is some connection that you can study, you can also naturally look at its p curvature. So that's all I want to say about the quantum connection. Now I would like to discuss these operations, which are the quantum steering operations, the main objects of today's talk. So the definition originates back to the work of Fukaya in the late 90s. So Fukaya observed that if you look at the classical definition of steering operations on FP coefficient singular cohomology, you can try to quantize that in the same sense that the quantum cohomology is a quantum deformation of the classical cup product. So he gave this idea for a definition, and its properties were systematically explored by the work of Nicholas Wilkins in much more recent years. And instead of giving you the full definition, I'll try to tell you what the key properties of this thing is. So quantum steering operations are defined for every fixed cohomology class of x in FP coefficients. For every such b, you have an associated operator, sigma b, which again acts on the underlying vector space of quantum cohomology. And it's a map of degree p times the degree of b. This. And it carries these extra parameters, t and theta. And where do these t and theta come from? So t and theta are two commuting variables, each of degree 2 and 1. And this is exactly the tensor product of the underlying vector space for quantum cohomology with the group cohomology of Z mod P in FP coefficients. So this ring is a graded power series algebra in these two variables, let's say for P greater than 2. But the definition of this also exists in P equals 2. And these are, again, defined just like any other symplectic invariant. These are defined from counts of holomorphic spheres or curves. And the holomorphic maps that you count to define these things are from this parametrized copy of P1 with P plus 2 mark points. One mark point at 0, one mark point at infinity, and p mark points along the roots of unity, like this. And then you put, again, instance constraints like this. So along the roots of unity, you plug in the same class b that was fixed in the definition of the operation. And then you put the input instance constraint here and the output instance constraint here, just like we have done over there. And the thing to observe is that this domain curve of the holomorphic map that I would like to count has a natural Z mod P symmetry. So essentially, what you do to define this invariant is try to count equivariantly with respect to that Z mod P action. So you want to take some kind of quotient of the moduli space by the Z mod P action. There are some analytical difficulties in doing that, but after one surpasses all those difficulties, one can define a map like this. And this Z mod P action in this picture is what's responsible for these extra parameters. So what are some properties of this operation? Well, the first thing is that, as its name suggests, it's a deformation of the classical Steiner operations. So if you, again, set all the contributions from non-trivial holomorphic curves to be zero, then the operation that you end up with is just the classical cup product with the classical Steenrod operations from algebraic topology. So Steenrod operations are particular cohomology operations that exist on FP cohomology. So for any space X with this, when you consider the singular cohomology with FP coefficients, you have an action of these things called Steenrod operations. And you can assemble this into a map called the total Steenrod power, which you can think of as some kind of generating function for all those kind of operations. So this maps a cohomology class to its total Steenrod power, which is a power series in T and theta with coefficients in the cohomology. And the coefficients are exactly what you get by the classical Steenrod operations that you might be more familiar with. So you have this property that the quantum Steenrod operations are quantum deformations of these Steenrod operations. And the second property is that instead of setting all the quantum or Novikov parameters to zero, if you set all the equivariant parameters to zero, the Z mod P equivariant parameters, then the resulting operation is just the pth power in quantum cohomology. So it's not only a quantum deformation of Steenrod operations, it's also an equivariant deformation of pth power in quantum cohomology. And another one is that it's compatible with the quantum product in the sense that if you try to compose these two endomorphisms, then the resulting operation is the same as taking the quantum Steenrod operation for the quantum product of the two classes involved. So these things can be defined, again, for these nice symplectic Kähler manifolds with that kind of nice positivity condition. And after Wilkins has obtained a lot of computations and partial computations for examples like toric Fano varieties, this has found many applications in symplectic topology. So this is something that is of rather recently increasing interest in symplectic topology. So it has applications in Hamiltonian dynamics, or mod P mirror symmetry. So some parts of symplectic topology really uses these operations crucially. But the problem is, it's hard to compute. Because the operation itself is defined from counting some kind of solutions to perturbed, generically perturbed equations, and you need to consider infinitely many of such moduli spaces coming from the fact that you have infinitely many equivariant parameters. And so these are quite difficult to compute just by looking at the geometry. So this leads to my main result of today, which is that although these things are expected to be quite difficult to compute in general for symplectic manifolds, for conical symplectic resolutions, they actually have a very nice answer.
Thanks.
At the stage of writing up these results. So suppose X is a conical symplectic resolution that's nice enough in the sense that if you look at these extra torus actions that preserves the symplectic form, holomorphic symplectic form, then the fixed points, I want that to be discrete. So essentially what I'm secretly using here is some kind of theory for theory of stable envelopes, some well-defined theory for studying the cohomology of things like this. And now we fix a second degree cohomology class. So once you fix a second degree cohomology class, you can define both the quantum connection in mod p, and you can also define these quantum senior operations. And then the theorem is that the p curvature of the quantum connection in mod p is almost the same with the quantum senior operation. What I can show is that the difference is a nilpotent endomorphism. And moreover, if the matrix of the quantum multiplication by B as an operator acting on cohomology, if this thing has distinct eigenvalues, so a simple spectrum, then one can actually show that these two operations coincide. So P curvature is quantum stable. So what's nice about this theorem is that you can read it in sort of two ways. One is that because the quantum senior operation is the same as this P curvature, quantum senior operations, which are generally difficult to compute, now have a very easy way of computing, because the P curvature is just something that you can readily compute as soon as you know what the quantum product is. So it's actually much less data than trying to compute something, do something like equivariant, loop equivariant Gromov-Witten theory, right here. So on one side, it gives you a computation of these. And on the other hand, it also gives you a direct enumerative geometry interpretation of what these P curvatures should be. So these are defined in kind of a roundabout way. It's that you have this quantum connection, you reduce it mod P, and then algebra gives you this P curvature. But you can also just define P curvature directly in terms of counts of holomorphic curves like this. So that's a statement of the main theorem. And in the remaining time, I would like to discuss a little bit about the ingredients that go into the proof of a statement like this. So any questions?
So, I mean, are there examples where they're actually different?
No. So I want to get to this at the end of this talk. But the conjecture is that these are actually always equal. And also not only for conical symplectic resolutions, but possibly for any symplectic manifold. As all the examples that I have computed so far doesn't contradict that statement. So there's no known example where this is actually different, which is quite surprising. That's a great question. So what goes into the proof? The key statement that's being used here is something about even more operators that act on quantum cohomology. And there's, for conical symplectic resolutions, there are extra operations, which are called shift operators. So you can interpret this in terms of something like a Coulomb branch action on quantum cohomology. So the version I'm going to use is some abelian version, because I'm only looking at this T cross S1 action on the target manifolds. So how does this work? So for every choice of a co-character, say one parameter subgroup from S1 into the Hamiltonian diffeomorphisms of X. So in this case, this T cross S1. S1 doesn't preserve the holomorphic symplectic form, but it preserves the Kähler form that's compatible with the complex structure there, and that's the symplectic form that I'm using for defining these symplectic invariants. So it's so one can make that into so that Kähler form is actually S1 invariant, but the holomorphic symplectic form is definitely not.
So am I right that the there's a Coulomb branch construction only for the co-characters of T? Is that correct?
So there is a generalization of the Coulomb branch action on quantum cohomology in the non-abelian case. That's due to
not the non-abelian. I'm worried about the part that shifts the symplectic form.
Shifts the symplectic.
I'm worried about the S1. I'm fine with
yes.
Fine with the non-abelian loop.
Mm-hmm.
I was concerned that the Coulomb branch construction wouldn't work with the S1, which rotates the whole symplectic form.
Well, the definition.
Yeah.
The definition I'm going to present, it only uses the fact that you have some loop inside the Hamiltonian diffeomorphisms of X. So maybe it's not a physically a good Coulomb branch action, but so maybe that was just a remark. I'm going to define an operator for every co-character. Maybe I'll just say, put it that way. So for every co-character like this, you can associate an action again on quantum cohomology. So again, this is defined from some counts of holomorphic maps. But in this case, it's defined from counts of holomorphic sections of a particular bundle over fiber bundle over P1. So you have this fiber bundle over P1 whose fiber is given by X. And the total space of this is obtained by taking two copies of the two disk times X and using this loop of diffeomorphisms of X as a clutching function along the boundary of those two disks. So for every co-character, you can associate a vibration like this, and then you want to count sections of this bundle to define these shift operators. And the key property is that the shift operators act in a way that is not linear over all of the equivariant parameters in this picture. So you have equivariant parameters from the group, and you have equivariant parameter that's like the loop equivariant parameter. And how the shift operators act on these equivariant parameters is that they shift the equivariant parameters like this, and hence they're called shift operators. So this is really the key property for these kind of operations. Now the key ingredient that goes into a proof of the main statement is a compatibility relation between the quantum senior operations and the shift operators. So to provide a little bit more context, let me introduce some of previous results. So now this is a theorem in the early days of the study of equivariant Gromov-Witten theory for these symplectic resolutions, which is something about the compatibility of the quantum connection. It's now no longer here. The quantum connection and the shift operators. So the statement is that the quantum connection, again, depends, if you look at the equivariant quantum connection, it depends on these loop parameters and these extra equivariant parameters for the target. And these commute with the shift operators up to this kind of shift. So this is some kind of a compatibility relation between the differential connection defined by the quantum differential equation and the difference equation defined by these shift operators. This is some kind of compatibility. And also, there is a more recent theorem due to Paul Seidel and Wilkins, which claims something about the compatibility of the quantum connection and the quantum streamer operations. So I could have introduced this as the fourth property of quantum streamer operations over there. But the claim is that the quantum streamer operation actually commutes with a quantum connection like this. These are all supposed to be equivariant cohomology, and also up there. So this definition is originally not in terms of equivariant Gromov-Witten theory, where the target has extra symmetries, but it's not too difficult to generalize everything to that case. So this theorem was proved in the non-equivariant case, and also the same proof can be extended to the equivariant versions as well. So this is covariant constancy. Of the quantum streamer operations. And maybe it's good to make a remark here that all previously known computations of quantum streamer operations before this result relied on this covariant constancy as a constraint on the sigma b. And this can be used to partially determine sigma b in low degrees. So here, by low degrees, I mean for small degrees of the holomorphic curves that are being counted. So for small powers of q, you can use this relation to try to compute what sigma b is from the data of quantum product and classical streamer operations. And now, in light of some kind of compatibility relation like this, and with this theorem, one can try to prove a compatibility relation with the shift operators and the quantum streamer operations as well, because those are the extra ingredients that exist for these kind of conical symplectic resolutions. And indeed, one can prove that the quantum streamer operations are also compatible with these extra operators, the shift operators. So in light of this relation, one can think of this as some kind of a partner theorem to the result of Seidel and Wilkins. And now once one has a relation like this, one can ask if I'm interested in computing these operations, how much does that constraint actually determine what these operations are? So how strong of a constraint is that? And the answer to that question is this kind of theorem. So one can use the following facts. First, that the p curvature of the quantum connection and the quantum streamer operations both satisfy the property that if you forget about all the quantum contributions, then this gives you the classical cup product with the total schema of power. In this case, if it's degree 2, this always looks like this. So both of these operations are just taking cup product with this thing here. And also, you use that both the quantum steering operations and the peak curvature, if you take the non-equivariant limit, if you turn off the loop equivariant parameter, then both of these are just taking the cup product with the pth power of b in quantum cohomology. And together with this relation about the shift operators, you can conclude the main result. So in fact, the computational power of a constraint like this is rather immense. So once you know that there is an operator that commutes with both the quantum connection and the shift operators, then there's nothing much it can be. So the difference of these two things has to be definitely nilpotent. And how do you get to a corollary like this when the quantum product has distinct eigenvalues that they're actually equal? So this is where I'm going to just hit this with the big stick. So there's an upcoming result of Ettinghoff and Varchenko that proves some kind of structural results for the quantum connection in mod p. So they prove a lot of things about the quantum connection in mod p, or more generally, for any connection in mod p that has a companion operators like the shift operators like this. And one corollary of their work is that for the covariant quantum connection in mod p, I'm going to paraphrase their result here. If the quantum product has distinct eigenvalues, then so does the p curvature in that same direction. So this is for this H2. So they actually prove a more precise statement, but this is all I need to use to conclude something like this. Because if you know that the p curvature has distinct eigenvalues, then I know that the quantum Steenrod operation commutes with the p curvature because it commutes with the connection. And the p curvature is just some polynomial in the connection. So these two are simultaneously diagonalizable. Their difference is nilpotent. If one has a simple spectrum like this, then they actually have to agree. So that's how this last statement follows from this work. And an upshot is that this statement here, that the quantum product of divisor classes, or classes H2, have distinct eigenvalues, this is known by previous work for many conical symplectic resolutions. So this includes examples like the cotangent bundle of the flag variety that was discussed earlier as the work of Braverman, Mollick, Okunkov, also for partial flag varieties, the quiver varieties of type A, also fall in this category. And things like the Hilbert scheme of points on a plane. These are all examples where you can apply this method to conclude that the quantum Steenrod operation and the p curvature are actually equal. So all of these results that I've explained so far involving these shift operators and the compatibility of quantum steamer operations with the connection and the shift operators, these use crucially that we have these extra operators in the case of conical symmetric resolutions. And also for this final proof, we also need to know something about the quantum cohomology of these. We're using something about regular semi-simplicity of the quantum product matrices. However, one can try to imagine that the same thing holds for target varieties that are not symplectic resolutions as well, which is going back to Ben's question earlier. So the conjecture is that, in fact, the p curvature of the quantum connection and the quantum steamer operation on degree 2 classes agree in general. So one can check not only for these targets like conical symplectic resolutions, one can even try to compute in known cases what the p curvature and the quantum steamer operations are for, say, toric varieties or complete intersections in toric varieties, things like this. And so far, all the examples that I have checked actually passes this conjecture. So even for things like even for things like intersection of quadrics and CP5, so that's a closed Fano variety. For this, one can also check that this actually agrees. So this suggests that the case of symplectic resolutions can be studied not only as examples of interest by themselves, by their connection and representation theory, but one can also try to exploit the computations that you get out of these examples, where the computations are easier because of their rich structure, to try to guess what the general phenomena for symplectic topology is. And arguably, the quantum connection for closed Fano varieties are much more interesting. So if one can show something like this, it would be very interesting for symplectic topologists. I think I'll stop there. And thank you again for the invitation. It was a delight.
Any questions? So do hypertoric varieties also fit in this class of distinct eigenvalues?
I actually didn't check so far. Only thing I checked in detail was this kind of Springer resolution case. But then I've been telling about this result to representation theorists, and they told me that there are all these other examples. And I think the quantum cohomology of hypertoric varieties are well understood by the work of McBreen. So if one stares at this formula for long enough, I think one might or might not be able to add hypertoric varieties.
Probably we just ask for one.
Yeah. Yes.
Other questions? All right, let's try again.
Thank you.